fluffy bread,
classic burger buns,
and so many carbs. Carb fear is real.
But Hero Bread makes healthier versions of the carb-heavy favorites we love most. We're talking fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, zero sugar, and seriously, great taste. Plus, more of the dietary fiber and protein you want with no compromise. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke. All right, so what is your chat, Emma? What have you been up to?
Oh my goodness, what have I been up to? We've spoken pretty recently, so I've actually not been up to a huge amount. I actually read the book for the episode that I'm doing today, so it was a full novel, so I've been reading that this week.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so it's quite interesting. Annoyingly, there is a TV series associated, but it's no longer available online that I can find, apart from if you pay through Amazon Prime. And I was being a bit of a cheapskate because I just bought the book, so I might be less of a cheapskate and buy afterwards. But yeah, apart from that, not a huge amount. It's been freezing cold in Scotland. Just to make you happy that you've moved away, we've definitely come into like the winter. I'm not even classing this as autumn anymore. It's literally freezing cold.
Really? So. Well, I'm having to wear a jacket now. You're pleased to know. And I am out of my Birkenstocks and wearing sweatpants, but I have not yet put my heating on.
Okay. Heating's on every day, all day, right now. How about you? What have you been up to?
I actually watched a really good series, not one that you recommended to me, which is a surprise, because normally my things that I watch are things that you've recommended to me. But I was having a little look last night, and I came across this three-part series called Secrets of the Psychopath.
Well, that sounds good.
It was on, not sure if it was like Five Star or one of the other ones, but you know, like
Channel 5. Yeah, yeah.
It was a three-part series about this psychopath and basically how he had this relationship with like a vulnerable woman. And it was it happened in Ireland. It wasn't a case that I'd heard of. And it was actually really, really good. I really enjoyed it. I watched all three parts last night. I think they're about an hour each.
Okay.
But it was totally worth it. It was really good, really interesting. And I would recommend it. Other than that, I've been doing the masterclass course that I was telling you about. Yeah. I finished the R.L. Stein masterclass and I was doing the James Patterson one. Mm-hmm. Just to look for hints and tips around writing, things like that. And I'm now doing one by Dan Brown. Da Vinci Code is one of my favourite books. I've read that at least twice, if not three times. Every time I read it, I still love it. I read four or five of his books really, really quickly. I couldn't put them down. So I thought, well, this will be a good class to do. Like the R.L. Stein, because I loved R.L. Stein when I was younger.
Me too.
The Point Horror series with, you know, Richard Tankersley Cusick and all that. Yeah, they were brilliant. I loved Point Horror. And I never read Goosebumps because I wasn't too old for it, because actually I think I was reading Point Horror at age 7 or 8, and I think it was meant to be for teens. Mm-hmm. But Goosebumps was, I think it was too immature from a reading level for me. So yeah. I never read Goosebumps, but totally self-confessed geek. I love the Goosebumps film with Jack Black. It's really good.
I've not seen it.
I've watched it twice. It's really good. It's got the character that he's sold loads of books about, Slappy, you know, the ventriloquist dummy.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah, and honestly, the film with Jack Black is really good. I really like it.
Oh, I loved Goosebumps. There was one that really freaked me out, and I can't remember the name of it, but basically the person in it had died, but they didn't know they were dead. And they were like going around their life and just people weren't responding to them. It took them ages to realise they were dead.
Mm.
But it wasn't like The Sixth Sense. It was actually a lot more believable. Like it was a kid and they were like getting up and going to school and stuff like that. And they were like, God, why are people ignoring me? This is so weird. And then they heard, it was something wow, like they heard people. It was really creepy. And I remember it stuck with me. Oh, that's totally.
That does seem pretty creepy for a kid's book.
Yeah, I mean, because it's got you questioning your own mortality and your existence. Yeah, I'm like, I'm seven, I just want to play with Barbies.
Yeah, that's pretty full on. But yeah, I had a bit of a blast from the past. I saw a post on social media a little while ago and it was basically showing all these books and things that were turned into programmes. And it was like The Babysitter's Club and Sweet Valley High.
Oh,
and
I loved Sweet Valley High.
Yeah, I read all them. And then was it Sweet Valley Twins when they went to university or something? I can't remember.
But so yeah. Sweet Valley was the reason that I thought Jessica was like the coolest name ever.
Oh, really?
So like, yeah, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, God, I wish I'd been called Jessica. Oh, God. It's just.
What was the twin you called again?
Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I shouldn't remember that.
Our listeners are probably going to be in the same age bracket as us because I know they'll get it. A few years ago, Sean and I went for a night out. We weren't having a great time up to then and we just needed a bit of a break, I think. And we got to this hotel room and I was devastated because it was basically like a matchbox. Oh, it was so tiny and I was just like, are you actually kidding me? And it's funny now, but at the time I just was just like, can anything go right? Like, you know, like it was just, you know, you feel a bit overwhelmed with like everything when like
it's the last straw. Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, can nothing go right in my life? You know, I was raging that I paid for this hotel room in Glasgow city centre. The next day we were hungover to hell and we woke up in the morning, put on the telly, and the saving grace was Sister Sister was on.
Oh.
I hadn't seen it in years and I loved that programme when I was younger. Keenan Kell, Sister Sister, you know, Sabrina, Clarissa, you know, all that kind of stuff. I was like, yes. And I thought, you know, at first I was like, I'm going to watch this and it's going to be so cringe. No, I was watching it and I was like, this is still as good as it was, like, you know, 20 years ago or whatever. I watched it and it was the saving grace for me. And I still loved every minute of it.
I still feel that way about 10 Things I Hate About You, the film. And like we've said before, Grease 2, like I firmly believe they are still as good as they were. I don't watch it back and I don't cringe. I'm just like, this is a masterpiece.
I think I've told you about the cheesiest film ever. Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Oh, right.
Honestly, it's, if somebody watched it now, they'd be like, this is utter shit. But I still think it's amazing. All this like 80s cheesy music. And I'm just like, yes, I am here for it.
Bring it on.
Hi, I'm Jenny, the host of It's Murder Up North. If you're curious about the murderous north of England, this podcast is definitely for you. I've lived in various parts of the north of England. I went to college in the shadow of Saddleworth Moor, where Myra Hindley and Ian Brady buried those five innocent children. I've worked in the city of Leeds, where the Yorkshire Ripper targeted his victims in the 1970s. Knowing how geographically close I have been to these crimes made me curious, and that curiosity became this podcast. However, my main hope is to help you see the person, not the victim.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
Chumba.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Emma, what is your case this week? I'm interested in this since you've said you've read a book on it.
It is the case of Malcolm Webster, aka the Black Widower.
It doesn't ring any bells for me. It's a Scottish case.
So he's not Scottish, but the first main part happens in Scotland and then it kind of comes back to Scotland a couple of times as well.
You're not going rogue.
And his dad's from Scotland, if I really needed to have a tenuous link. The case I'm covering today is that of Malcolm Webster, who's also known as the Black Widower. Malcolm was born in London, in England, on the 18th of April 1959, along with his twin sister, Caroline. His father, Alexander, who was also known as Sandy, was a Scotsman, originally born in Kincardine, and he was actually a detective superintendent at the Met Police in London. It was in the police force that Sandy had met Odette, who was Malcolm's mother. They married in December 1952. They had a son called Ian, and then they had the twins. After this, Odette gave up her role as a police officer to be a full-time housewife. I'm always interested in the background of certain people, so I did, and I read this wonderfully in-depth book, which I absolutely recommend to everyone. It tells you about his childhood, and the household sounded very odd. The whole family had to leave the house three times a day when Sandy wanted to use the bathroom. The dad wanted to use the bathroom and the whole house had to leave, and the mum had to like bundle the babies into prams and they had to leave.
So some kind of phobia, fear.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
Very odd. At mealtimes, the children weren't allowed to speak to each other or to their parents unless Sandy had specifically addressed them. And there's lots of themes like this throughout that it's just a weird, weird household and he rules with like an iron fist.
I was just about to say, I'm sensing controlling much.
Yeah, absolutely. Seems a bit of a shame for Malcolm in that his sister seems to have been quite normal and his older brother seems fairly normal as well. And it sounds like they were favoured by the parents and Malcolm was kind of the last one and he wasn't popular at school. Everyone thought he was a little bit odd. He didn't really have any friends. He was one of these kids, and I think we've all known someone like this, but probably not to the same extent, but they fake illnesses. You know, they've got everything wrong with them and you're just like, really? So he used to like pretend to faint and say that he had all these illnesses. He was shunned by the other kids because they just thought he was a bit strange. And actually, apparently, some of the parents were kind of like, yeah, we don't really want you playing with that Malcolm boy. He's a bit odd. So that probably didn't help. He was actually treated for epilepsy and asthma as a child, but as an adult, he didn't suffer from them. So it's likely that that's because he made them up as well. At a young age, he displayed an obsession with fire and earned the nickname Pyro at his Boy Scouts club.
I find that really fascinating that people have pyromania, the whole fascination with fire and how it moves and everything. It's bizarre, really
and
bizarre.
So many killers have it.
Yeah, it's a really odd one.
It's a weird one. He was sent to a private school where his attention-seeking antics continued. Apparently he was also in the Amateur Dramatic Society, which does not surprise me, and by age 15, he left with no qualifications at all. He decided to train as a nurse, which I believe is what his mother was before she went into the police. So when he was age 17, he was a trainee nurse and he had a girlfriend who fell pregnant by him, aged just 15. He convinced her to have a secret abortion. And then as soon as she'd done it, he dumped her. Her father had actually given him a job at a local nursing home because he knew that Malcolm was doing this training to be a nurse. When he was in the nursing home, it was very quickly noticed that personal possessions and money was going missing. And it was pretty clear that he was the only person that started when this had happened and he was sacked. So the girlfriend at the time and the father are not named on records, but they have said that she kept it secret for years, and then she told her father she'd, you know, carried this with her and was really upset about the fact that this had happened. And he just felt so guilty because he'd given him the role. And, you know, I think that he'd fired him before the pregnancy slash abortion happened, because the daughter was really upset with him for firing Malcolm. But it was pretty clear that they both were well shot of him.
I think it's fair to say that no matter what age you are, going through something like an abortion would be a traumatic experience, I can imagine. Mm-hmm. But bearing in mind the fact that this girl was a child, mm-hmm. having to go through something like that at that age, I imagine would be horrific in itself. Mm-hmm. But then because it was secret, not having the love and support of your family, I can only imagine that would make it 10 times harder. So that's especially cruel.
Yeah, absolutely. He then went on to see another girl who, by all accounts, was his first true love. Mysteriously, the girl went on to take her own life. The details of her suicide have not been shared with the public. However, it has been stated that the police looked into her death and they cannot find, you know, distinct evidence that anyone else was involved. I just find it an interesting fact to put in there. Not long after, Malcolm had an affair with a married woman who was 8 years older than him, which ended after a few months. I think he was trying to get her to leave her husband, and she essentially rejected him and went back to the husband and didn't want anything to do with him. He took this rejection really, really hard, so much so that he decided to go travelling around the world. He just upped and left. So he travelled around the world. He was all over the place until around the age of 30. He was working at a children's hospital in Abu Dhabi. So there's nothing really said in this period of time, but based on the rest of his history, I'd be amazed if nothing happened. That's all I'm going to say. So age 30, he's working in a children's hospital in Abu Dhabi as a nurse. He was the subject of an investigation after 3 children in his care under the age of 6 died of cardiac arrests within 6 months. It should be noted that cardiac arrests in children under 6 is abnormally rare. It is just so unlikely for that to be the cause of death for them. And he was the person that found each of their bodies.
It just put me in mind of the Colin Norris case. Yeah, I mean, it seems obvious that cardiac arrest in a child is incredibly rare, unless it's something like undergoing surgery and they had some sort of pre-existing condition or something, and the you know, the risks are raised.
But they were in intensive care, but the thing is, in intensive care, if you've ever been there, if you've ever been unfortunate enough to be there or see someone in it, you're hooked up to everything under the sun and your heart rate is monitored so closely that it's highly unlikely that they're just going to notice someone falling into cardiac arrest and dying of it, you know, so quickly, especially young kids.
I think it maybe, I mean, I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me if the occurrences of it happening were increased during a surgery.
Well,
child was under, you know, general anaesthetic or something. But just being on a ward,
just finding them in their like bed, hospital bed, it's odd.
Yeah.
Something that unfortunately played to his favour is that in the UAE, for cultural and religious reasons, post-mortems are not usually carried out and burials are swift. So there was ultimately no definitive proof that he caused the deaths, but he was dismissed and left under a cloud of doubt. He actually left the country entirely. There was also, in some of the sources that I looked at, a woman that had been reportedly seeing him at the time, who was also a medical professional, said that he had been stealing medications and injecting himself with them. So that was never fully proven either. He was never prosecuted for it or anything like that. But all in all, there was a lot of suspicion over him and he was punted and he ran. In 1991, Malcolm Webster is back in the UK. He met his first wife. Claire Morris was a 29-year-old, bubbly, happy, beautiful woman who was working as a nurse at a hospital in London. She met Malcolm at a party and she immediately knew that he was the one for her. She was smitten pretty much straight off the bat. From a lot of things that people say who could be incredibly charming, quite funny. He had apparently a really nice English accent. He'd gone to private school, so he sounded quite posh. And I think with a lot of these types of people, it looks like he's charmed pretty much every woman he's ever met. So it seems to be a common theme here.
Common trait of psychopaths.
Absolutely. And he's, you know, he's not a bad looking guy, so I don't think that would hurt. And he comes across as well traveled. You know, I've lived all over the world, I've traveled all over the world. And you can see how if you didn't know anything about him or his past, you might be, you know, pulled into that that frame of mind. So she was smitten. He was the one for her. That was it. Claire's family were not quite as convinced. So Claire was she was adopted. Her adoptive father had unfortunately passed away when she was a teenager, but Claire's mother, Betty, recalls finding him strange. And the first time that he met Betty, it was at a family dinner. He called her stupid, his girlfriend's mother. So she was pretty outraged at that, obviously. Additionally, at this point, Malcolm was unemployed. So not perhaps the man that you want your daughter to be dating. However, Claire was smitten. Her mom wanted her to be happy. You know how these things go. He was looking for a job. He was eventually offered a role in Aberdeen, which was far away from Claire's family in Surrey. But nevertheless, they decided to move and start a new life together. Claire apparently loved Scotland, loved the countryside, and was excited. They both took jobs with NHS Grampian, and Claire started a degree at Aberdeen University. She'd been head girl at her school. I think she was quite clever and vivacious, and everyone that speaks about her, you just feel like it's such a loss that she's no longer with us. Spoiler alert, but I'm pretty sure you'll see where this is going. They both took the jobs. They were married in September 1993 at King's College Chapel in Aberdeen, which is absolutely beautiful. It's part of the university. It's gorgeous. And the family they moved into their first home together in Old Meldrum in Aberdeen. Family of Claire, even though they were far away, they did notice some changes in her. So she'd always been laughing, or, you know, they said that her life was full of joy and she seemed a bit more withdrawn. Her extroverted nature seemed to have been dampened a bit. Malcolm seemed to be a bit controlling of her. Little things like Claire would call Betty mum, and he said that he didn't like that and he'd rather she said mother, even though he called his own parents mummy and daddy. So yeah, that comes across a little bit odd. Claire also complained of being tired all the time and needing to sleep a lot, and just other kind of physical symptoms. But when she spoke to her friends, they kind of thought, you know, you should probably go and get this checked out. And she'd say, no, I think it's the cold and I think it's moving to Scotland. I mean, I can understand that you don't want to think something's seriously wrong with you, but it sounded like she was drowsy a lot, kind of really struggling with balance and things. So it's a shame that there wasn't more looked into that.
I would imagine as well, I don't want to jump the gun, but I assume that he was isolating her from friends and family. I mean, moving away to Aberdeen in and of itself, if her family from Surrey, that's like stage one of doing that.
It was later determined that Malcolm had been drugging Claire with temazepam throughout their marriage. Claire, however, said she was very, very happy. Every time she told friends how I'm really happy with my husband, everything's great. I think as a classic abuse victim, she was wanting to, maybe she was embarrassed, maybe she was wanting to paint a portrayal to everyone around her so they wouldn't be worried about her. She actually told friends how generous Malcolm was because he had taken out life insurance that meant that if anything happened to him, she would be well looked after. However, there was a matching policy for her. On 27th of May 1994, a bus driver was travelling along a road at Kingaudie in Aberdeenshire and saw a 4x4 down an embankment off the side of the road. He stopped to help. He could see a figure crawling on all fours away from the car. The man seemed uninjured and said he'd swerved to avoid a motorbike. The driver asked if there was anyone else in the car and he said there wasn't. He had to look around just in case there was a bike because this driver was quite, you know, used to driving in the middle of nowhere, and he thought, well, if he swerved to avoid a bike, the bike might have crashed as well. So he had to look, no bike to be seen. He also briefly looked in the crash car, but he didn't see anyone. But it's still unclear why that maybe was at the time. He ran to a local farm to call for help, and while he was away, a fire started in the engine of the crash vehicle and soon spread throughout the car. A female motorist stopped to help. She saw Malcolm lying on the ground and Claire lying unconscious in the passenger seat of the car, and it was reclined and she was kind of slumped in it. She walked towards the car to try and pull Claire out, and the car exploded. She has never forgiven herself because she'd actually driven past 10 minutes before and then came back. But when she drove past, I think the driver of the bus was helping, so she thought that it's all in control and the fire wasn't happening. But she's thinking, if I'd stopped then, I maybe could have pulled her out. Eyewitnesses that were there state that they didn't see Malcolm make any attempt to remove Claire from the car, and that they saw melted petrol cans behind the driver's seat. By the time the car exploded, Malcolm had actually told three separate people, including an off-duty policeman, that there was no one in the car. He was taken to hospital and he was mostly unharmed. He kept complaining of pain, but the doctors couldn't find the source of it. Claire was obviously pronounced dead at the scene. When officers arrived at Betty's door, that's Claire's mum, in Surrey, to inform her of Claire's death, she knew even before they spoke. She told the officers that Claire had called her recently to tell her of another near miss they'd had when their car went off a country road and rolled down on its side, down a hill, until it was stopped by a large bush. Following the accident at Claire's funeral, Malcolm was loudly grief-stricken, played the grieving husband. He wore a neck brace, once again, despite there supposedly not being any need for that. And he actually clutched onto Claire's brother's hand. He was apparently so upset that he left the funeral before many people could give their condolences.
Oh, God.
You're going to hate him. I'm so sorry. There's so much more. Several friends and colleagues of Claire's raised concerns with the police regarding her death. The road that Malcolm had taken with the story he'd given didn't make sense. So he had said that he was driving some paperwork to the hospital, and Claire had decided to come along to give him company, but then she often fell asleep in the car, so that's why he'd brought, reclined her seat and covered her in a blanket and stuff like that. And the road that he took was not a direct route to the hospital. There wasn't any real reason. He'd gone out into the countryside, so it made no sense. And just some of his behaviour and some of the stuff that she'd said. So they were told that no foul play was suspected. It was just a horrible accident. In the run-up to Claire's death, Malcolm had taken out a dozen life insurance policies on Claire, which he claimed less than 2 weeks after her death. They totaled £208,000. And according to friends, Malcolm had spent almost every penny of that by the end of the year. In December 1994, he found a new job selling medical software to hospitals in Saudi Arabia, and once again, he leaves the UK. So he's in Saudi Arabia. In May 1996, he met his second wife, who you will be glad to know is alive and well today, just to put that out there. Her name is Felicity Drum. She is amazing. She's from New Zealand. She was a self-made woman. She'd gone to Saudi Arabia. She'd paid off her mortgage back home and owned her own property because she was working there. I think you get paid better. You don't pay the same tax and things like that. So she was building up a bit of a tax-free nest egg in her bank account. She was doing really well. She was socializing. She was this vivacious blonde woman.
I like her.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Winning at life.
Winning at life. And then unfortunately, she met Malcolm. Felicity had grown up in Auckland with her siblings and her parents. So Edward Bryan is her dad, but he's known as Brian, and her mum is called Margaret. So her father was the head teacher at a local high school. Felicity was instantly drawn to Malcolm. Once again, the charm, the good looks, his English gentlemanly accent, he'd traveled the world, blah, blah, blah. He was selling software, so you know he tried to play the whole I'm just a little bit geeky as well, that kind of thing. She does remember him pushing along the relationship much sooner than she would have liked. So do you remember when we talked to Mary Turner Thompson about love bombing and them trying to kind of drag you along into a relationship much quicker? That's what I feel has definitely happened here.
Yes, and do you know what, I've actually just remembered as well, that's what Deborah Newell, Dirty John series as well, that relationship was progressing a lot faster than she wanted it to.
probably because they don't want you to wise up. And if they can get you in their grip as quickly as possible.
Predator is such an apt word for people like this. Like, they are truly predatory.
He's unbelievably callous, this man. By January 1997, just 8 months after meeting, Malcolm proposed. They were married in New Zealand in April 1997 and everything seemed well. Then they went to a resort. It sounds like it's on a coast in New Zealand. And something weird happened on the first night of their honeymoon. Felicity had a cup of tea and fell asleep.
Did she have a terrible accident?
No, she slept for 36 hours.
What the fuck?
Yep. He gave her a cup of tea, she drank it, and she slept for 36 hours. And here's where the gaslighting comes in. She woke up, Malcolm said, "You've been asleep for 36 hours. She said, "I cannot believe that. I've never slept that long in my life. Like, why didn't you call a doctor? What happened? Like, what the hell? Like, this is completely ridiculous. I've never had anything like this happen before." He said, "Oh, no, it's fine. You did actually wake up and I fed you, but you went back to sleep. Can you don't remember it?" "And if you hadn't woken up just now, I was literally just about to go to the doctor. So it's actually fine. So it's fine. You seem fine now."
He's starting it on their honeymoon. Like, he doesn't hang about, does he?
The first night of the honeymoon.
Yeah.
Over the next few months, Felicity continued to experience extreme fatigue. Where have we heard that before? Headaches and other troubling symptoms, such as everything she ate tasting weird. Acrid is how she describes it. She was referred to a neurologist who couldn't find a tumour or any kind of issue and diagnosed her with a specific type of migraine, which, to be fair, is mostly based on symptoms. I don't think there's actually a test as such you can do for that kind of diagnosis, but her symptoms were extreme enough. Around this time, the couple decided to move to Scotland. Malcolm had got a job in Scotland again, in Aberdeen again. Prior to their departure, because of some of Felicity's symptoms, her GP had run some tests and she was really worried about her liver function. She said that the results were similar to what she'd seen in victims of date rape drugs. In the confusion of the move, Felicity put the results to one side.
Yeah. You told me this woman's alive and well, didn't you?
She's alive and well.
Good.
As well as you can be after all this. No, she's very well. There's some amazing interviews with her. If you have a look on YouTube and look up Felicity Drum, she's very interesting and eloquent, and it just goes to show, like we've said in so many times before, that anyone can be a victim to these sorts of people, so don't underestimate them. So they moved to Scotland, they settled in Aberdeen, and Felicity found out she was expecting their first child. Instead of Malcolm being elated at the news, he was furious and he berated her. He was saying all these reasons that they shouldn't have a child, and one of them was money. That seemed to be the recurring theme. But eventually, for whatever reason, he obviously wised up and realised that wasn't going to get him anywhere. He decided that he was looking forward to the birth of the child, and that moved on. Over her pregnancy, she once again had to sleep for long periods of time, very fatigued all the time, found herself really dizzy, unsteady and slurring sometimes. And her doctor put it down to stress. Also during her pregnancy, in September 1997, a mysterious house fire gutted their cottage. So Felicity returned home. Malcolm was already outside the house and he said, "It's fine. We're insured for everything." And I managed to save some items. Curiously, some of Felicity's identification documents from New Zealand were missing. And then her New Zealand driver's license reappeared in Malcolm's study at a later date. And she just presumed, oh, that must have been one of the things that he saved. The couple decided to move to New Zealand to be closer to Felicity's family so they could have support with their young son in 1998. Prior to the move, as you do when you're moving literally across the world, they put all the possessions in storage, and it was this really well-known moving company in Aberdeen. They had a huge warehouse. They joke that they moved Noah off the ark because they've been around so long. On 12th of November in 1998, the warehouse containing not only their items, but those of hundreds of other families went on fire and £5 million worth of items were destroyed. Malcolm had been there moments before the blaze took place.
This guy is not fucking subtle, is he?
In the book, it gives the actual story, and it's even more ridiculous. He was in the pub with Felicity and I think some friends, and he said, oh, yeah, I need to go and buy a CD or something ludicrous like that. Then he went to the warehouse. What he was actually trying to get was some, you know how we've been doing like the ancestry.com type stuff. He'd been doing his family tree, and it was in a suitcase in this warehouse. So he went to retrieve it. And then afterwards, they were watching it on the TV, and he was like, oh, that's so weird. Thank goodness I got these ancestry details in this suitcase before that happened. How lucky is that? Hilariously, when he opened the suitcase.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
He'd picked up the wrong one, and it was full of Felicity's underwear.
Yes.
I know. Sod him.
Love it.
No one has ever been convicted of starting that fire. Can you think of how many families will have been devastated at things that have been lost? And can you think of the insurance payouts, which obviously was presumably one of his motives, because he's had more insurance payouts than I've had hot meals. It's ridiculous. So they moved to New Zealand as planned, with little more than the clothes on their back and a suitcase or two. They didn't really have any belongings, but obviously they had the insurance payouts. And they moved
and
in.
And Felicity had her underwear.
Yeah. Felicity had so much underwear, she didn't know what to do with it. They moved in with Felicity's parents. The pair had settled on a dream home that they wanted to buy. So he was going to sell the property in Scotland, which apparently was only partially gutted, that one that had the fire. So I think they managed to revamp it somehow so that it could be sold. And then Felicity, the property that she'd already paid the mortgage off on, they were going to sell that as well. And they were going to buy this like 6-bedroom stunning mansion in New Zealand, and that was going to be their dream home. February 1999, there was an arson attack on the dream home. Someone had pushed paper through the letterbox and set it on fire, which delayed the sale. Felicity had already put down $60,000 New Zealand dollars on this property and was waiting for Malcolm to transfer funds from Scotland to complete the purchase. Malcolm blamed the archaic Scottish banking system.
I was going to say the banks. I've heard that one before.
Yeah, exactly. Felicity's father was becoming pretty suspicious about Malcolm, generally speaking.
That's one thing I'm happy about, is that they moved to New Zealand. Well, she moved back to New Zealand, mm-hmm. and he went with her, because she's then with her family again, and she's got that support. So that's a good twist to the story.
And if you look at the articles and the interviews, there's one where a woman in New Zealand says to her, oh, they picked the wrong woman, didn't they? And she went, no, he picked the wrong family, because she had her family around her, and that's the reason that she's still alive, really. Felicity's father had become suspicious of Malcolm and decided to do some digging. They had actually asked to borrow some money from him to secure the property that they were wanting to buy, and he was a bit concerned about the fact that it was taking so long for money to come from Scotland, and just a lot of excuses, and he just generally didn't trust him, basically. So he'd started doing a bit of digging. Not long after that, another mysterious fire raged through the Drum family home. In the middle of the night, Felicity woke up and heard a weird noise, and Malcolm said, oh, no, it's fine, just go back to sleep. And then they woke up and there was a fire that had been started downstairs. Her father was trying to douse the flames, and he was using a big bucket. Malcolm kept filling up the kettle and trying to douse it with the kettle, which is very bizarre. So he was clearly not that concerned. And he even said to Brian, oh, we'll all laugh about this later. which is not what you say when someone's home has just been on fire. It was burnt badly enough that they all had to move to Felicity's sister's.
This guy's a fucking clown show.
He is. He's so ridiculous. When you look back and read overall, that's why I was, once again, like we're saying to Mary and to other people who have been in these kind of situations, when you look back over the catalogue of events, it seems ludicrous that anyone would believe any single part of it. But at the time, with the way that they persuade people, they somehow get away with it. It's crazy. A week after the fire at the Drums' home, so it was the 12th of February 1999, that was the deadline for the paperwork to be signed for the new house. So I presume it's a bit like the missives that we have in Scotland. I'm guessing there's a similar thing in England where you basically agree that you're definitely going to buy the house and you sort out all the money. It's a similar kind of thing, I think. So like I said, they had borrowed money from Felicity's dad. He had also sorted out some money through a lawyer, and Malcolm had assured them that he was going to sort it all out when the money came from Scotland. They drove to the bank that day, and as they drove over a bridge on the motorway, Malcolm complained to Felicity that the steering felt a bit weird, a bit wonky and a bit off. According to Felicity, he started to gain speed and weave across the lanes of traffic wildly. He was getting faster and faster, and eventually the car was aimed directly at a lamp, which was going to hit Felicity's side of the car. There was only one airbag fitted in that car, and it was in the driver's seat. So Felicity theoretically could have been killed. Felicity managed to grab the wheel. She wrenched it away mysteriously. Again, the steering somehow worked when Felicity managed to get hold of the wheel. And the car ended up in a ditch. So Malcolm seemed really angry, but they were both unharmed. I think there wasn't much damage to the car either. Felicity was aware of the deadline at the bank and was saying, look, we're both fine. The car is okay. I think whatever it was has sorted itself out. I think we should maybe just go and get that sorted. This is the last day for us to get the house. And Malcolm suddenly clutched his chest. He was apparently having a heart attack.
You could write it, couldn't you?
He's unbelievable. A policeman had arrived because there'd been reports of the car going off the road, and he called an ambulance for Malcolm. Felicity was wanting to go to the bank and get it all sorted, but Malcolm pleaded that he might, you know, pass away, and could she please just come to the hospital with him? It was later determined that he had not had a heart attack. A week later, Malcolm gleefully announced that the money had arrived from Scotland, and he wanted to go for a picnic with Felicity and their son to celebrate. They drove to the chosen location, which was a forest area, and on the way there, he handed Felicity some water because she needed to stay hydrated. That's the last thing she could remember until the ringing of a mobile phone woke her up. She was slumped in the passenger seat of the car, alone, groggy and confused. She answered the phone and it was her father on the line. He begged her to come back immediately, regardless of what Malcolm had said. Felicity, obviously her vision's still quite blurry, but she could actually see Malcolm about 300 yards away, pushing the buggy with her son in it away from the car. She climbed out, kind of clambered out as well as she could, and shouted at him to come back. He said something along the lines of, why are you awake? And was shocked and horrified. And he tried to convince her to go back to sleep. So he was saying, no, you can just go back to sleep. I'm just going for a walk. She said, no, I need to go back to my parents' house immediately. I need to see my dad. He was really agitated about this, really not happy at all whatsoever. But he did drive her there. And he was apparently sweaty and, yeah, just pretty agitated the whole way there. And he said to her when they got there, whatever your dad tells you about me and your money, it's a lot of nonsense. She never anticipated what she was going to find out. When they checked the car, the boot was filled with petrol, wood and newspapers. Felicity and her family firmly believed that Malcolm was getting their son away to safety before setting the car on fire. All of the money was gone. There was no money coming from Scotland. Hair samples from Felicity confirmed Malcolm had been drugging her for a long time. Brian had uncovered Malcolm's secret life. There were real estate inquiries back in the UK regarding just him and his son. And he had purchased flight tickets for him and his son to the UK, not for Felicity as well. They found 9 life insurance documents taken out on Felicity with her signature forged on them. The total value of them was 1.9 million New Zealand dollars. Felicity checked her bank balance. Because of all the moving around, Malcolm had redirected her statements. She had $12 in her bank account. He had taken everything. She confronted him. He didn't deny a thing. He had actually immediately fled and booked into a motel, which just shows the kind of person he is as well. She went to the New Zealand police with her sister because, once again, he hadn't denied anything. He said something along the lines of, well, if you died, you would have been happy because I'd given you a child and that's what you wanted. You wanted to be married with a child, which is probably one of the most deplorable things I've ever heard said to someone. Malcolm, if you recall, his father was quite high up in the police back in the UK. He called his dad and fled the country. So there was warrants out for his arrest, but he wasn't caught in time. There were arrest warrants issued then in 2000, but he was actually later turned away at the border as he tried to come back into New Zealand. No one knows exactly why he tried to come back to New Zealand, but it was several years after. So he'd left. So essentially, the New Zealand police had agreed that this had happened, that he was a criminal that needed to be caught, but he'd left, and I don't think they had enough evidence to kind of do any sort of extradition or anything like that. So basically, Felicity and her family had to pick her life back up and start all over again, and she was still technically married to him. He'd left her destitute. She didn't even have enough money to divorce him legally. The mind just boggles.
And this is a really successful woman. I mean, she'd made her own success when she met him. But it's just, I hate to say it, and it sounds callous, but I'm not surprised.
Mm-hmm.
People like this are absolute leeches. It doesn't surprise me that he drained her bank account.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's the, you know, the Mary Turner Thompson.
All over again. And with several different women.
Yeah.
Same as her.
Yeah.
So the trail went cold, unfortunately, and it could have stayed that way. But Jane Drum, who was Felicity's sister, was very much taken by the whole state of affairs. She did a lot of campaigning. She became well known for campaigning against domestic violence and other similar related issues. And she happened to be over in the UK at a conference, I believe. And it was a chance encounter with a senior British police officer 7 years later. So she spoke to them and told them the whole story and what happened. And it would appear that a kind of informal chain of events was set in motion. And the police reopened the case. So police from New Zealand spoke to the police in Scotland. And the police found out that Webster was engaged to be married for a third time. He was still married, so it would have been bigamous. He was living in Scotland, in Oban, actually, oddly, and which is where I've just been recently.
Bloody love Oban.
Love Oban. Great choice. Great choice, even if you are a psychopath.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was in Oban, and he had found this, once again, nurse who was independently wealthy, who was called Simone Banerjee. And he charmed her, the whole lot, the usual. They were engaged to be married. The police found out this would have been bigamous. And he told her that he had terminal leukemia. He also convinced her to change her will, leaving her entire estate to him. So the police found out about this. They had this whole investigation going on. They were pretty sure that something had happened to Claire and that he was the cause of it. They knew about everything that happened in New Zealand. However, they didn't have enough at that moment in time to charge him with any of those things, and they were very convinced that Simone's life was actually in danger. So they did something that I have never heard of before. Have you heard of an Osman letter?
I haven't.
So it's named after a 1998 legal case, and it's given to people by the police as a warning for a death threat. essentially it's the warning of a death risk or murder is if they're concerned that that person is in danger, and it could be that the person that they're living with or whatever it is, someone around them has a criminal background or has actually threatened them, and the person doesn't know about it, but they don't believe themselves to be in danger. So the police issue this Osman letter, which says, these are all the reasons that we think you might be in severe danger. Your life is in danger. And she didn't know any of this about her fiancé at the time. She thought it was nonsense. She said, what on earth? She didn't know he had a wife. She didn't know he had a son. She didn't know he had a wife that had passed away. She didn't know any of it. And she was absolutely gobsmacked. Even later on, after his conviction, she called for him to be placed in solitary confinement because she believed he could charm anyone, essentially. Also, she was a frequent sailor living by the sea in Oban. She remembered they had gone on a boat trip, and she later discovered that the foil in her life jacket had been punctured, and she hadn't checked her life jacket because she'd sailed with him. Everyone else's life jackets were fine, and now she believes that he was going to try and kill her by staging a boating accident.
Subtle.
Well, it's not a fire, I suppose. The team of Scottish detectives did their full investigation, and they unravelled the supposed accident of Claire Morris. They had found that she had died in a fiery car crash, which was written off as an accident, the death was suspicious enough to do tests, and they did tests on a preserved tissue sample from her. And like I told you before, it showed that she'd been drugged with temazepam, which is a sedative. The result of the joint investigations in New Zealand and in Scotland finally led to justice for Claire, for Felicity, and possibly saved Simone Banerjee's life, with Webster being found guilty of murder, attempted bigamy, and a string of fraud and fire-raising charges in 2011. So he was jailed for life with a minimum of 30-year sentence in July 2011 after one of the longest trials in Scottish legal history. At the High Court in Edinburgh, Judge Lord Bannatyne said Webster, who must serve 30 years before he can apply for parole, had committed cold-blooded, brutal and callous crimes for financial gain. He said, the murder of your then wife was an appalling one, and all right-minded people will be utterly shocked. Claire Morris's family said Webster was a monster. Her brother, Peter Morris, said he believed that 30 years was the correct sentence for an extremely dangerous criminal. It's more important that he's taken from society because of the damage he can cause to women. I would hate for that to happen to anyone else. And that is the case of Malcolm Webster, aka the Black Widower.
Wow, I'm really surprised I haven't heard of that case before.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. And so he's been sentenced to 30 years. And when was that, did you say?
2011.
Wonderful. So will he be eligible for parole after the 30 years?
Theoretically, but I can't imagine anyone in their right mind would let him out.
So how old would he be at that point?
Oh my goodness, now you're testing me. He was born in 1959. What's that?
So he's 64?
Yeah.
This year?
Mm-hmm. 64 this year. And he's still got from 2011 to 2041.
So he's got 21 years to go.
Yeah. I can't do quick math, sorry.
84 when he's eligible for parole, theoretically.
Theoretically, but then remember he's got these horrific conditions.
Yeah.
He might drop dead of an actual heart attack, which would be just...
A surprise fire in his cell at the prison?
I honestly... The amount of fires and road accidents that this person has had...
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, these things are fairly rare as they are. You know, I'm thinking that, like, the amount of fires that have happened in this guy and car accidents, like, you would start to get suspicious.
It's also the fact that everyone that knew him when he was a kid were like, oh yeah, old Pyro. Like, did no one see this coming?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very surprised I haven't heard the case. And can I ask, what is the book and was it written by Felicity Drum?
No, it wasn't. So the book is called The Black Widower and it's written by a journalist called Charles Lavery. But it has a lot of information from the victims. And there are actually some other lesser I wouldn't say victims, women that have been involved with him that have told their stories as well, which just kind of echo him being a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Essentially. But yeah, it's a really interesting book. It goes into a lot. Yeah, The Black Widower, Charles Lavery. You can get it on Amazon. It's really interesting. It goes into a lot of detail and has a lot of direct quotes from Felicity and from Claire Morris's family. And yeah, it gives you a bit of the background to Malcolm. And obviously in one of these episodes, we can't give you every little tiny shitty thing he did. But rest assured, there are lots of awful things that he did. And he's just generally a terrible human being. He's also tried to appeal his sentence twice, and that's been denied. So that's a nice thing.
I don't know why, but I feel like I'm more enraged by this guy than I have been by the majority of the cases that we've covered. Like, maybe it's because it triggers personal memories for me, and I don't know, but I just feel like this guy's got under my skin more than a lot of the other cases that we've covered. I just feel like, how dare he?
I know. I've been enraged. I've been completely enraged reading about him and just looking at his stupid face in the articles. You know how sometimes once you already dislike someone, anything they do is annoying. Like, yeah. Everything I read about him, I'm like, oh, of course he's got a stupid accent, and of course he did that, and oh, no wonder he liked that kind of music. Or do you know what I mean? Which is just so stupid. But once you hate someone, you just kind of hate everything about them sometimes.
I know what you mean.
He's awful. He's truly evil, because the thing with Claire Morris, if you read the book or you even read articles about her, you just get this vision of someone that everyone loved. There were screeds of friends at her funeral, and it's just so sad to be seeing that life taken away and see her family, because she was her mum's best friend, and you know, this poor mother has had to live with the fact that her daughter was taken away, and then they didn't get justice for such a long time.
It surprises me that with the fact that there was petrol cans in the back of the car, and the fact that he told several people that sought to help that there was nobody else in the vehicle.
And multiple people raised concerns, even people that had come from the fire service to do like a forensic examination, even they raised concerns. He is the worst.
Yeah, he's a fucking scumbag.
Yeah, I can't handle the fact that people like that live in this world and get to, I think it's the thing that he just upped and left and, you know, moved to a different part of the world and, well, just charm somebody here. And that apparently before he kind of got involved properly with Simone Banerjee, there was another woman that he was dating somewhere in and around Oban as well. And then when he found out that Simone Banerjee had this estate, so to speak, he just changed allegiances and was like, oh, well, bye. Yeah, we're not a thing anymore. I'm going to go and date her instead. It's just shameless. And like you said before, he's not that bright. Some of the things that he's done are so blatantly obvious. My favourite one is the warehouse. Obviously, it's a terrible thing to happen, but the warehouse going on fire. And he'd been there. He'd been there moments before it happened.
I love the fact that he got the wrong suitcase.
I know, me too. But you know what? He's got plenty of time in jail now. He can be sitting on Ancestry.com all he likes. He can sit and do his little family tree, and it's not going to make any difference. It's very sad for the fact that Felicity has a son by him as well. So that poor son will always be tied to him. And I've chosen not to mention his name at all because I don't think it's fair or right to link him. But unfortunately, when you do Google Malcolm Webster, you know, it comes up with suggested Google searches. People Google his son a lot, which just kind of sickens me a little bit because he was literally a baby. So that's the case of Malcolm Webster. I'm glad you, I don't think enjoyed it is the right word.
Yeah, it was interesting.
I'm glad it affected you in some way.
Yeah. Your reaction.
Yeah, that makes me sound a bit weird, doesn't it? Well, don't worry, I'm not planning on setting any fires anytime soon, so good.
So,
do you have a fun true crime fact or story for me?
Fun crime-related fact to wrap up. So this one is called Cannon Ire. So it is most definitely illegal to fire a cannon within 300 yards of a person's residence to the deliberate annoyance of that resident. In case you really don't like your neighbour and think the best way to ruin their Sunday afternoon might be to devastate their peace with cannon fire, you have been warned. This is an offence under the Section 55 Police Act 1839, although to date there have been no prosecutions. Perhaps try something a little more subtle.
So there we go. I mean, that's dedication. Yeah. I like that.
Although I feel as though, you know, I've collected all these sort of fun true crime related facts, mm-hmm. and then obviously heard about how they abolished a lot of these Scots laws and things. So now I feel a little bit cheated because I feel like some of the ones that we've maybe read out before have maybe now no longer exist. So aww. Maybe we need to do a little bit more fact checking before we...
I mean, I don't have any hope that our listeners are listening to us for legal advice. So I think we're probably good on that front.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't like the thought of giving out information that's factually incorrect. I feel
that's right, yeah. So put the cannon away just in case. Either way.
Yeah, just get the safe side. Just pack that cannon away. You have been listening to Murder, She Spoke. I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
You can catch us on social media, Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. If you want to email us and give us a case suggestion, you can email us info@murdershespoke.net. And if you have enjoyed listening, please leave us a 5-star rating and or a review on your favourite podcast platform. If you haven't enjoyed listening, please don't leave us a review. Yeah, just skip that part. Thanks very much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.